You have to know your value. You have to know what you want, because nobody else can get that for you. So you do have to have a very good grip on what you bring to the table. What is your potential? What is it you want? What's important to you, and where are you willing to compromise, right? So you have to understand your position, and you have to understand what's happening in the environment, but you can't predict people's behavior when it's in the moment. So perfection is just never going to happen.
That was Rusana Glaser, and you're listening to episode 164 of the Building Psychological Strength podcast, where we uncover the information, tools, and techniques to turn our mind into our most valuable asset.
The courage to face fears with persistence.
Being able to be present enough in this moment to choose my response thoughtfully.
We have the strength to bend to life stressors, to bend to adversity without snapping, without breaking.
There are only six things that contribute to our quality of life, and they are all experiences.
In every moment, we are deciding who we want to be and how we want to live our lives.
Noticing what your brain is doing and then being able to make choices.
Mobilize the things that we know lift us up.
Fear is not logical. It's primal.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to the Building Psychological Strength podcast. My name is April, and I'm your host. Before we dive in today, I want to say welcome to anybody who is here for the first time. I'm so thrilled, and I'm really excited that you're here for this week's episode, because it is a very tactical, applicable episode in so many facets of our lives, but I'll get into that in just a moment. If you're somebody who is returning, thank you so much. Thank you so much for being with us along this journey, and thank you so much for continuing to choose yourself and choose your own development over the million of other things that I know are competing for your time and attention. It is so important, increasingly important, whenever our lives, I mean anytime, but whenever our lives get extremely busy, whenever they get too full or overwhelming, the times when we feel like we don't have time to focus on ourselves, those are the times that we need it the most. Those are the times that we need to be more psychologically strong than other times that might be a little bit easier and less taxing on us. So thank you so much for being here. I really appreciate it. Quick listener shout out to someone named Soraya, who left this comment on iTunes. The title was Motivation for Your Week. She said, I love, love, love this show. April finds the most inspiring guests, and her energy is just amazing. I can't recommend enough. It's awesome to hear that comment, because this week's guest is extremely inspiring. And I hope this week's interview inspires you to take action on something that you might be putting off. So let's dive into this week's episode. This week, we're talking to a woman named Rusana Glaser, and she is a sourcing professional. So somebody who, negotiates contracts and negotiates with vendors on behalf of larger companies. So she's a sourcing professional. She's a negotiation expert, and she is co-founder of BrightMeetsBrave.com. This is a website that is empowering women to ask on their own behalf. That's really key. Rusana is a successful professional. Her expertise lies in negotiations and relationship management. That's also very key. And she has experience negotiating for people like in things like manufacturing firms and retail companies in the US. She's negotiated abroad for large corporations as well as smaller privately held firms. And she has a very, and you'll see this in her interview, a very direct yet collaborative approach to negotiations and a unique perspective on global culture. She loves working with women and speaking about how women can find confidence to negotiate on their own behalf and succeed. Now, I'm absolutely thrilled about this episode because you'll hear it. At some point, I completely geek out about gender roles and gender, quote unquote, stereotypes. If you don't know this already, that was the area that I studied in graduate school, and it is so applicable here. before you think, oh, stereotypes, we're going to go down this negative, like terrible place with this episode. That isn't it at all. So I'm just going to leave it at that. They are not what you think, but they are so applicable to our daily lives and the way that we approach situations that might make us feel uncomfortable. And in fact, they help explain why we feel uncomfortable in certain situations, like negotiation. I also want to invite you to take a very broad definition to the word negotiation. Obviously, there are very direct and obvious places where this episode will help you. No doubt, this episode will help you if you're in a position where you're negotiating a new job, or in a position where you're asking for a raise, or a larger project, or a role in something new, or more money, or more leave, personal time off of your job. It can help with all of that. But I also invite you to think about how having better, more effective negotiation skills could help you within close relationships when you're trying to figure out how to decide who's going to do what and who's going to take on what, household duties, for example. Negotiation takes place anytime that you are trying to get something from another person or out of a situation. And this episode is so wonderful because we hit on so many facets of negotiation that make a lot of us, and I'm just going to speak from the perspective, we focus a lot on women with this because as a woman, I know, and speaking with my friends and also studying this in graduate school, this is one of those areas where in particular, we don't feel as confident in general. Now, maybe you individually feel very confident and that's great, but on the whole, the people who I speak with and the people who I have studied, that's not necessarily the case. And there are so many reasons why. So I say it in the episode as well, but if you walk away from this episode with nothing else, let me give you this gift. I want you to know that the fear that you have, the uncertainty that you have, the discomfort that you have, the feeling that you have that, oh my gosh, I'm just not good at conversations like that, I want that put to bed with this episode. There's nothing wrong with you. You're not deficient. You're not weak. You're not somehow not good at it. It is none of those things. There are so many facets that lead nearly all of us to feel the way that you do. It isn't difficult. These things like negotiation are not hard for you because there's something wrong with you. They're hard for you because they're hard. So I want you, if you walk away with nothing else, which there's no possible way that's the case because Rusana gives the best, most tactical tips at the end of this episode, so do not miss those. But if you walk away with nothing else, I want you walking away with a little bit more self-compassion, a little bit more understanding that there is nothing wrong with you and that you are not deficient, that this is just something that is hard and it's something that you can get better at with time. I really, really hope you take so much away from this episode because Rusana was extremely open in helping us take away actionable tips. They are scattered throughout this episode, but there is a big chunk of it right at the end about how you can both prepare for a negotiation conversation or series of conversations, also how to execute them more effectively, and how to follow up and make sure that things actually happen. It's such a valuable episode. I am so thrilled that we're tackling this topic, and I hope you all get a ton out of it. All right, let's dive in. Rusana, I'm so excited that you're here because we're going to be diving into a topic today that is really critical for a lot of us to just know about and be aware of as we move through our careers and really a lot of aspects of our lives. So I really appreciate you being here.
Thank you for having me. I'm thrilled to be on this show.
So you have, you're the co-founder of a website called brightmeetsbrave.com, and that immediately gets me really excited. But tell my audience a little bit about what you do at Bright Meets Brave, and they're going to know exactly why I was so pumped to have you on.
Yeah. So at Bright Meets Brave, we focus on working with women who need to find the confidence and the courage to ask on their own behalf, whether it being a raise or a promotion or a visibility project or whatever it is. And we also work with educating men on some of the differences that women experience in the workforce. So when especially companies are looking to put some solutions in place to address the gender pay gap, they can be effective.
That's amazing. And it's such important work that you are doing. And I love that you're focusing on it from both, both from the standpoint of women and also from men, because it is a much more holistic issue than typically we think about or that it gets talked about.
Yeah. Thank you. I think the reason we did that was because when we look at the upper management, it's still, predominantly male. Mm-hmm. And want to make sure when solutions are being put in place, they're effective. And the only way to do that is when you understand some of the issues and the struggles that women go through.
Yeah. Well, maybe let's dive in there. Let's talk a little bit about what you've found as you're working with people, the experience that a lot of women are having within the workforce, and some of those pieces that you educate on that are really, unique experiences that women have as they're moving up in their career.
Yeah, I'd like to go a little bit before what I have started discovering with women, because it all stemmed up, the whole idea stemmed up from a personal experience that I went through a few years ago. So professionally, I was negotiating on behalf of my company, and I was doing really well. And then at one point a few years ago, it came a time when I had decided to go in and ask for a raise. And I noticed how uncomfortable and unsure all of a sudden I felt going in and asking on my own behalf. And that kind of sparked the curiosity about, well, am I the only one who is feeling like that? And that's when it started developing into me kind of first interviewing women and just kind of sharing experiences. And what I found out is that the fear and the uncertainty and the lack of confidence that we experience when we only ask on our own behalf, not on behalf of others, it's kind of universal among women. So that's what kind of sparked it. And then what was really interesting to find is that women, the difference between when we ask on behalf of others, we have absolutely no problem doing that. And we're very effective, just as effective, if not more, as men, according to research. Because we are brought up in a society where women are viewed in supportive roles. So when we ask on behalf of somebody, that's us being nurturing and supportive, which fits really nicely in the gender roles that we're brought up with. So when it's time for us to go and advocate on our own behalf, we all of a sudden become unsure we have a hard time associating dollar amount or privileges, with our self-worth and what we bring to the table. So we all of a sudden start doubting ourselves. And quite often we have a huge fear of, well, what's the response going to be? And that the fear of uncertainty, it kind of holds a lot of women back.
Absolutely. People who are listening to this, I'm sure, the women who are in this audience, if you think about the last time that you had to ask for something for yourself, whether it's a raise or a promotion or anything else, even within the context of relationships, asking to maybe divide work differently within, a close romantic relationship or anything like that, it can be really daunting. At least for me, I tend to go into a place where mentally that mental chatter is asking me, are you sure? Are you sure that what you're asking for is fair? Are you sure that what you're asking for, that you can support it, that it's valid? Because I really do. I start to question myself, and I would never do that. You're absolutely right. I would never do that if I was negotiating on someone else's behalf or asking for something for someone else.
Yeah. You brought up a really interesting point. So there are multiple steps, right, that I work with women, and we get them to the place where they feel absolutely confident in going in and asking and advocating on their own behalf. But you touched on something really interesting. You said you're not sure if it's fair. And that is actually one of the stepping stones in our preparation, is the sense of entitlement. Men and women have a different gauge when it comes to entitlement. And quite often, you will see that a lot of male, and that's or a lot of men, they will say that I deserve more because of this, this, and this, or this is what I bring to the table, and that's why it warrants to give me X. And women quite often, instead of asking for more, they're just going for that, what's fair?
Mm.
And so there are certain things you can do, you know, and knowledge is, to me, is the most powerful thing ever. So when you start finding out, when you start doing the research and when you start asking people, whether it's, I'll take a salary as an example, that, hey, how much do you make, or how much would you expect to be paid in this position? When you ask men that and see what their answer is compared to what you feel you're worth or versus what women's answer is, that's when the light bulb clicks and you understand that, oh, wait, he thinks that this position warrants this, and my my starting point was below even that, you know, the low range of that. The entitlement piece, with knowledge, you can overcome that entitlement and get to the point of saying, you know what, I deserve more.
And I love that you're using both of those words within that description, because I think sometimes the word entitlement, people, sometimes it gets a negative connotation in our society, like, oh, you think you're entitled to this without ever having to work for it, without whatever, blah, blah, blah. There's like, it can almost be a loaded word. But when you say the word deserve, like, are you deserving of it, or is it something that you deserve? It really puts a different spin on that word, and you realize that, do you see yourself as somebody who has a value that matches that number? Do you think the value you're providing or whatever matches that number? And it's a different thing. It puts a different, it puts you in a different mindset than just saying, like, I feel entitled to that money. It really is, you know, no, you're providing a value and you're being reimbursed for it.
It really is a lot about the shift in the mindset. Because, you know, through, as I work with women, it's not that, you know, it's not, women aren't learning new skills from me, right? We're not, you know, putting them through any education. It's really just the shift in the mindset of how we evaluate what we bring to the table, understanding our worth, understanding when is the right time to ask. Because the other interesting thing is a lot of women think, you know what, I don't really feel comfortable asking now, so let me just get into the position, or let me take on this additional project and show them what I'm capable of, and then I'll ask, because I'll prove myself. And that can be kind of, it doesn't always play out the way we expect.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And you mentioned something earlier, too, around gender roles. So folks who don't know my whole background, what I actually did my doctoral work on. So I studied this for 5.5 years in graduate school. I wrote my dissertation, did a ton of just primary research, that studies that I designed and conducted and published myself, was in this specific area, not around negotiation, but around the unique factors that impact women in leadership positions. And what's interesting about it, you mentioned gender roles, and I want to just break down for people listening to this what the way that social cognitive psychologists think about this, and especially loaded words, or words that can be loaded, like the word stereotype, because ultimately our gender roles are made up of a bunch of stereotypes. And what those are, from the perspective of someone like me who studied in this area of psychology, is it's simply the subconscious, or below the level of your awareness, part of your mind that's constantly learning, constantly watching, constantly scanning your environment. It's this adaptive, amazing machine that we have, right? This part of our mind that can learn without us even trying. It's that part of our mind picking up on patterns. So in our society, it finds patterns with what it encounters around the concept of women. Now, this can be direct encounters, like women have acted this way. This can also be the portrayal of women. Women are portrayed this way. This can be the way that people talk about women. Women are spoken about in this way or treated this way. And this goes for any construct. It doesn't matter if it's women or men or people of a particular religion or people of a particular, you know, ethnic background or socioeconomic status or any other, you name a social group. It doesn't matter. Works the same way. So we notice these patterns, and what ends up happening is when you are the person, when your identity matches the pattern that your mind is noticing out there, it starts to form sort of a belief system that sets up, think about bumper bowling, right? It sets up a set of bumpers that your bowling ball, it rolls down inside those bumpers that are set up. And when you start to do something that is outside of what that quote-unquote stereotype or that mental habit that your brain learned passively over time, when you start to do something that deviates from that, like be really assertive in a leadership position or stake your claim and ask for a lot of money or do something else that isn't the nurturing set of bumpers that your mind learned, it starts throwing you thoughts and feelings and emotions and questions and all of this stuff to try to keep you inside those bumpers. So it isn't that, and I explain it this way because I want both women and men who might be listening to this thinking like, oh, great, it's going to be another, you know, one of those things where these women are going to scream at me. I want people to understand how passively this happens, that our minds learn these things, and how little intention, how little thought, like rational thought, goes into the creation of these. They just happen. If you're a human with a brain, it happened to you, no doubt, 100%. And it doesn't make you a horrible person because you have these cognitive constructs. It just means you're human with a brain and you grew up in society. So I just wanted to give a little background there.
For sure. You actually touch on a really important piece. So implicit bias, which is exactly what you just described, something that occurs we all have bias. I have biases. I have implicit biases. And implicit bias just means that I don't realize I have it. You know, it's not a conscious decision that I'm going to say I'm against this group of people or this is the certain behavior that I expect. It just happens through our upbringing and such. But what's really interesting is the implicit bias. So I work with a lot of women. One of the things that prevents women from asking on their own behalf is a fear of backlash. And backlash normally occurs, well, it only occurs when the respondent has an implicit bias. Because if they have a bias that they're not aware of, I mean, it occurs if they have explicit bias for sure, but if they have a bias that they're not aware of where it taught, you know, they think of women as nurturing and supportive, and then somebody comes in and asks, you know, rather assertively for what they deserve, it can throw off the respondent too, and they can take a different stance. And that's what women are afraid of, right? Like, well, I don't want to be perceived as difficult to work with. I don't want them to not give me projects, all of a sudden, things like that. But it's the implicit bias, right, that causes that. If the person doesn't have implicit bias towards women, then that reaction is not going to occur. They're going to take the ask and treat it like they would any other ask, regardless of the gender. And the interesting thing that, you know, as I've talked about men, if you are, you know, a male listening to the podcast, there's actually a really Harvard, I believe, put out an implicit bias test that you can take. Mm-hmm. The implicit bias, I think it's implicitbias.com. And it's amazing. It just tests your ability, your brain, really. It's all relying on your brain on where your biases are, and they have different, you can take it for gender, you can take it for sexual orientation, you can take it for race, and it's really insightful if you want to know if you have the bias, because a lot of men don't realize how strong their bias is or if they have it, but when you take it, it's kind of the first step for men to realize, oh, wait a minute, I need to be careful when I have these kind of interactions because I do have a bias and I need to watch, you know, my behavior.
Agreed. And even, I mean, even women, like when I take the gender one, I have an implicit bias toward associating women with nurturing things. And that's just because, again, if you're a human and you have a brain and you grew up in a society where you see the same TV that all of us saw, that's going to happen. And it doesn't make you a bad person. It just means you're a human with an adaptive brain. But yeah. you bring up a great point. I always speak about it in this sort of matter-of-fact way because I really do mean it. It isn't, you're not a bad person on either side if you have these, you know, subconscious or implicit beliefs. It just means that your brain did its job and it quote-unquote learned, but it learned in a way that isn't so adaptive today. And now that you know better, you can work on doing better. And yay for us that we have a prefrontal cortex that, like, we can step in and use when we want to. Hooray.
Yeah. Well, I wanted to make one, just one small comment, too, on the whole bias and backlash, because a lot of times women, if women do ask and they experience backlash, which could happen, you know, we work with, first of all, you need to prepare for it because you never know what other people's implicit biases are. So you need to prepare that it might happen. And there's certain things you can do to offset it. And one of it is flexibility, because flexibility is very congruent with females. So signaling flexibility when you see that the respondent is, you know, changing kind of the, you know, you can see in their body language or maybe their regular verbal language that they're struggling, that would be, you know, signaling flexibility is one way to offset it. But the other thing, too, is a lot of times women, we tend to be really hard on ourselves. So, you know, we tend to think that, you know, I did something wrong. If this ask didn't work out, what didn't I do well? What didn't go perfect? And this is really critical to remember that backlash is not on you. If the backlash occurred, it's entirely on the person who is sitting across from you and the respondent because they had the bias that they weren't aware of and they acted upon. So it's really critical to understand that while you can do some things that can offset it, it's not you. And you can have very effective negotiations that aren't perfect. So perfection is not a prerequisite to an effective ask.
Yeah, if we can just dive a little further into not needing to be perfect, like a way to approach this and feel comfortable with the fact that it might not go perfectly and have that be okay.
Yeah. So one of the things in regards to perfection and negotiations that people think there's, you know, there's like, here are the steps that you need to follow, you need to execute, here's a script. And preparation is a huge part of negotiation. But one of the things about negotiations is no two negotiations and asks are alike. It's a fluid situation. So you have, if you're looking for perfection, you're just never going to get there. There are so many aspects that you just can't predict because it's not just up to you. You're having a dialogue, you're having a conversation with another human being who is going to have questions, who might have reactions. So to me, it's super critical that, hey, we can prepare. We can go through what-if scenarios, and we can have a plan A and plan B. And but you have to realize that there might be some surprises that might be thrown at you during the ask. And most of when we go through negotiations or asks, we go through some of the assumptions. We all make assumptions. And the only time you get surprises during negotiations is when your assumptions have been wrong. And that tends to throw people off. And so I just need, you know, we work through this over and over again. You have to know your value. You have to know what you want because nobody else can get that for you. So you do have to have a very good grip on what you bring to the table. What is your potential? What is it you want? What's important to you and where are you willing to compromise, right? So you have to understand your position. And you have to understand what's happening in the environment, but you can't predict people's behavior when it's in the moment. So perfection is just never going to happen. You don't know what that person was going through on the way to work. You don't know what kind of conversations they just had with the boss right before. Again, if you were making an assumption that, hey, this is really important to my supervisor, and then when you get into the ask and say, here's what I can deliver for you, and all of a sudden he says or she says, that doesn't matter to me, and you're just kind of like, well, whoa, I just built my whole case around this as a really important part. So just know that there are assumptions, there are surprises, there are circumstances that are just out of your control. But there are things you can do to mitigate. You know, a successful ask is a series of conversations most of the time where you set the expectations, start the dialogue, and then remain flexible during it. So if something gets thrown your way, a lot of times if we're surprised by something, we either start being defensive or we're rushing and trying to come up with solutions. And it's perfectly okay to say, you know what, I didn't consider this. I was working from the assumption that this was a really important piece to you. Can we reconnect? Like, can I think about this and get back to you so we can have a more productive conversation? It's totally okay to pause and, you know, and allow in yourself, you know, give yourself permission not to make decisions or anything during your negotiations. You can make commitments. You can make a commitment and say, you know what, I don't know the answer to this question. Let me come up with a proposal, or let me come up, you know, with an answer. I just don't have it on the spot. So, yeah, if you're looking for perfection, it'll never happen. And if you're striving for perfection, you're going to be more likely to try to mitigate every surprise or every unforeseen circumstances that happens during negotiation. And that just sets you up in kind of a spiral to make some maybe not the best decisions on the spots.
I love that. And, you know, you're bringing up something that's really interesting. That's probably another one of those sets of beliefs or expectations that people have going into this, is that I love that you said a successful ask is a series of conversations, because I think sometimes we think this is a one and done thing. Like, I'm going to go in there and ask, and man, everything is riding on this one conversation. When realistically, that isn't how people make big decisions. That isn't how we decide. Even if, you know, you're the person, if you put yourself in your boss's shoes or whoever it is that you're negotiating with, if you put yourself in their shoes, if it's something sizable that you're asking for, it might not be very likely that they can make a decision right at that moment. It may take some time. Like, I think about how I especially take in maybe surprising or new information, which you might be giving that person. I need some time for it to just sort of sit and cook in my mind.
Well, and a lot of times, you know, if you're asking a substantially different ask, or, you know, whether it's a big raise or maybe it's a different role, right? It's quite often, even though you're making the ask to your manager, quite often there's a lot more in the background that needs to happen. He might not be the final decision maker. He might have to go or she and advocate on your own behalf, you know, farther up the chain. But I think it's super clear. I agree that it's a series of conversation, it has to also be very clear what the expectations are. And say, you know what, at the end of the conversation, as you're wrapping up, and you might be talking about, you know what, I can't give you a decision now, but let me think about it and let me bring it up to, you know, to whatever C-level executive or whatever it is. It's really critical to say, thank you. What is the timeline when you would like to reassess? Or say, you know what, thank you for advocating on my behalf. I need to have a resolution to this within the next 2 months. How does that fit within your timeline? So I think it's critical to set expectations, so it's not just like, well, let's just reconnect whenever.
That's really key. You're kind of hitting on some interesting things that are making me want to go toward more of a specific set of recommendations from you, because One of the things that I'm hearing you say is get absolutely clear about what the next steps are going to be, about what you can expect to hear and when, what that person's actions are going to be. And from our conversation just prior to that, I also heard you saying, you know, if a person is learning something new or you're bringing them new information or something that might be unexpected, it might be helpful to that person to just voice that. Like, hey, what I'm about to or what we're talking about here, this may seem unexpected or this may seem new to you. So let's take some time and make sure that we both really feel comfortable with it before, you know, like sometimes pointing at the elephant in the room just helps everybody calm down a little bit. Like, you don't have to be defensive. I don't have to freak out and pretend like I'm hiding something. Like, let's just point at it and let's have a conversation about this big elephant in the room.
Well, and you know, like that's a really good point, because the next step is when you do that is the most critical thing in negotiations is asking really good questions, because the difference between just a dialogue and us having conversations versus negotiations is, A, in negotiations, you're going to trade value. You're going to ask for what is really important to you in exchange for providing what is really important to the other person. So you need to align on that. But then the other thing is in negotiations, you're objective is to find something that you don't quite know yet. So you have to pay attention to what people say. So you have to be an active listener rather than just like coming up with, you know, a response to the question. And but the other interesting thing is quite often we will go in and say, I want a 10% raise. Is this something you can do for me? And that is a yes or no question, which doesn't really help you understand the reasoning behind either of those. A much better questions to ask the best questions to ask are the ones that do not have yes or no answer. And, you know, as a mother, I can relate to it, because when my kids come home from school, if you ask, did you have a good day? Most of them, you know, 100% of the time, you're either going to get a yes or a no, because they don't want to talk to you. But if you're asking of, you know, hey, tell me what was one thing that happened that was funny, or what was one thing you learned today? They go into a dialogue, and the same thing happens with asks. If you ask, hey, can I, or vacation, can I get another week of vacation? The answer is, well, no, our policy says, right? But if you go in and explain your situation, explain why it's valuable to you and why you think it's a valid ask, and say, how can we make this happen? Or what are your thoughts? What are your thoughts are a lot better question than can we make this happen? So really go for the questions that start with what or how, you know, how can we make this happen? What would it take to make it happen are much deeper questions than just, is this possible?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I could totally see that. And something else you mentioned that I think fits, I'm curious of your thoughts on this, given how much you've studied in this area, but something that you mentioned around, you know, learning, almost learning what's in it for the other person, like a value exchange versus just you asking for something, that feels like going back to the conversation we had about gender roles, about stereotypes, about that type of thing, and women feeling like they don't want to overstep or ask for something that isn't fair. It feels like that would sit with both the recipient of this ask as well as the woman who might be doing the asking, if somehow you could figure out how both people are going to get something out of this situation, whether it's you're going to get a highly engaged worker who's really excited about this next opportunity because it's in an area and a skill set that I'm really jazzed about these days, or, I mean, something else. But that feels much more in line with what we learn women, you know, quote unquote, should be like, and therefore might be more comfortable for people.
Yeah. Well, and it's comfortable on the other side too, because it makes, if somebody's coming to me with an ask, it makes me see that, hey, this isn't entitlement, you know, especially if you, you know, if I have bias thinking, well, what makes you think you're all that? If somebody comes in and says, you know what, this is what I bring to the table, and if you do this, then I do that, or then we can accomplish this because, you know, as a result, those are much more, you know, it's just kind of like, okay, we're working together. It sounds a lot more collaborative than just me, me, me.
Mm-hmm. I could totally see that. So I'm thinking about all the women who are likely listening to this, or even, I mean, anybody listening to this, because we all have to be in a position where we're all going to be there, where we have to ask for something that we want or need at some point. Do you have sort of a high level how people can prepare and execute and follow up? Sort of a, I don't know, if there are just some highlighted bullet points, like action steps that people could take as they go into the next time that they're going to need to make an ask like this to try to be more successful.
Yeah. So just, you know, super high level, I'm not going to go into a ton of details, but I think it starts from the very beginning when you set up a meeting with somebody and you're going to go in for the ask. Put it on the agenda in the meeting, or stop briefly with a person and say, you know, I really want to connect with you on something, and this is what I want to discuss. Because the last thing you want is get into that office and with all your preparation and put it on the person, and then it just kind of it throws people off right away.
Yeah,
so
no kidding.
Perhaps a little bit before, right? That this person that, hey, I wanted to talk to you about this. When would be a good time? Send out an agenda on things you want to consider. Because it's always better for the other person to come prepared a little bit, or just at least have an indication of what you're going to talk about. And then preparation is such an important step that a lot of people miss, especially women, because we take up quite often, we spend so much time on gathering up the courage to go and ask that we forget, like, how do we execute an effective ask? And for the preparation stage, I cannot drill enough into people that you have to know your value, you have to know your worth, you have to understand what the market conditions are, what you bring to the table, what your potential is. A lot of women forget to think about the potential. Potential has value. People are going to bring you into the firm, or people are going to give you more because of the potential that you have. So think about that. In the preparation stage, work on conquering your entitlement, you know, where it's like, well, I can't ask for that much. Talk to people and talk to men. Men are our allies in this arena. There are more than enough men who are willing to help you, and they'll disclose the range that they make. If they're in the same field, in a similar position, that grounds you on whether how you will feel, whether what you're asking for you know, is fair to you or not. So really do the homework and don't just focus on women, because a lot of women talk to women. While considering the statistics that women are underpaid already, it doesn't really give you a good, you know, starting point. And then the other thing I would say, you know, time. Timing is a really interesting thing, because a lot of people talk, like if it's a raise, a lot of people talk about their raise at the time of their annual review. Not a good time to talk about the raise because the budgets are set. So think about, like, what is your boss is going through. If it's an annual review, you might want to approach it mid-year and just set the tone. So when they're going through the budget, they're already planning for it rather than just kind of being thrown at them at the end of the year. If you're negotiating a new offer, don't fall into the trap of, you know what, this is lower than I expected, but let me get in, let me prove, you know, that, because once you get in, then you're going to be set to a budget. And on top of that, you're going to be relying on the company's performance and things like that. So if you're evaluating a new offer, that is the most leverage you're ever going to have to negotiate. And then as far as fear of backlash, that's kind of like the fourth thing to address, is prepare for the worst. Look at your plan B's and plan C's, and because once you're prepared for a backlash, it's not as scary. And then you go in knowing that if this happens, then here are my options. So those are kind of the preparation stages. And then for the execution part, I really encourage people to set expectations, right? Make sure you're setting clear expectations in the beginning, and then kind of wrapping up at the end, like, here's what I heard do we agree on this? Like, this is what we've talked about, and this is the outcome of the meeting. And then just have a frank conversation with questions that are focusing on how and what, so you can understand the other side, present your findings, understand different levers. So just be genuine, be yourself. You know, everybody has different styles of negotiations. So don't try to, if you are soft spoken normally, don't go in just being all, you know, like, don't go in for the battle. Just be yourself and deliver your ask in high confidence. The biggest thing I would say during the negotiations is be prepared to say, you know what, let me think about that. And then rather than make decisions, a lot of people tend to make decisions when they get flustered.
Those are such good tips. I mean, really, really rock solid tips to help people do something that, again, is so terrifying for so many of us. So if you take nothing away from this episode, the one thing that I want you to understand, those of you who are listening, is that if you feel uncomfortable in a situation where you have to make an ask like this, or in situations where you have to negotiate, please know that it doesn't mean that there is something wrong or weak or deficient or whatever about you. As it turns out, you're just kind of normal, and it isn't something that a lot of us are very good at, or that a lot of us really are excited to go do. It's tough because it's tough. It's not tough because there's something wrong with you.
I've been doing this for a while, and I will say asking on my own behalf is still scary, and it's still hard even for me.
That's awesome. But awesome to hear that. This has been so good. I have to ask you, just as you think about, you know, the work that you do and just the work that we're doing here on the podcast, I would love for you to give us your definition of psychological strength.
Yeah. So to me, psychological strength means that you're able to stay curious and resilient in spite of your obstacles and fears.
Oh, that was so good. That was so succinct, and there was so much in that. I love it. That's so good.
Thank you.
I guarantee that there are people listening to this who likely want to learn more, because this is a topic that impacts so many of us in so many facets of our lives. Where can people learn more about you and the work that you're doing, and learn more about how they can negotiate on their own behalf?
Yeah. So you're welcome to go and check out our website. It's brightmeetsbrave.com. We post a lot of blogs on there, as well as any podcasts that we do, we share on there as well. And then we share tidbits on how to go and ask or execute an effective ask. Also, we're very active on LinkedIn. So if you are active on LinkedIn, go ahead and check out our company page there, which is Bright Meets Brave. We share a lot of original content there, as well as just a lot of really good resources to help you find the confidence. And we touch on a lot of different things there that are women-related in the workforce.
Amazing. Yeah. This has been so great. I mean, for no other reason, selfishly, it was really fun to go dig back into the work that I did in graduate school. But that being said, it's a topic that affects so many of us, and it's a topic that is really difficult for a lot of us. And so I'm really appreciative that you are working so hard to give people information and actionable tips that they can use to make something like this so much easier for them. So thank you so much for being here. I really appreciate it. And thank you for sharing this expertise that you have.
Absolutely. It's been a great pleasure. Thanks for having me.
It's a simple fact that nearly everyone in the world could benefit from building psychological strength. But not everyone will put in the time and effort to do so. But today you did. Thank you so much for listening to this episode of Building Psychological Strength. Now, if you're interested in building the mental toughness, confidence, and resilience you need to thrive through life's ups and downs, visit us at www.peakmindpsychology.com. Also, if there's someone in your life who could benefit from this episode, please share it with them. And if you yourself found this episode valuable, meaning if you took away even one insight that you can use to build psychological strength in your own life, we would so appreciate it if you would drop us a rating and a review on iTunes. The thing is, the more ratings and reviews we have, the easier it is to get this powerful and important content out to the people who need to hear it. Remember, your mind can be your most valuable asset or your biggest liability, and you get to choose. So choose wisely, my friend, and I'll see you next time on Building Psychological Strength.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply. When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.